outsourcing company, basically answering phone calls for this company called Yardi. And Yardi's been around, it turns out, since the 80s. It's based in California.
Hi, I'm Al Criazzo from Catskill Mountain Housing. You're listening to WGXC, Agra, Catskill, and Hudson.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai, a sculpture and architecture park and international residency center in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dusk until dawn. Art Omai presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. You are listening to Tech Talk with Ralph and Bill. Our call-in numbers are 518-697-7400 or 518-622-2598. We are coming to you live on WGXC Radio 90.7 FM. We are ready to talk tech. Are you ready to talk tech, Mr. Benko?
Hello, world. If you have tech, you have problems. If you have problems, we have solutions. Call in, let us know what your problems are, and we will come up with some clever solutions in my case, or not so clever solution in Bill's case. Hello, world.
Great. So if you're while we're waiting for the first caller, if you're in the wide world of wonder called tech, and you're using Oculus, which is like a 3D virtual reality thing. As you know, Facebook has bought Oculus, and now in order to use Oculus, you have to actually create and have a Facebook login. This has caused no small amount of controversy in Europe, where the Germans have push back against it hard, and Oculus is not selling currently in Germany as a result of these concerns, although they're going to service current customers. I would be interested to hear what people are thinking of this. Basically, it's an existing piece of technology that allowed you to go into virtual reality worlds, and you put a thing on your headset, and Facebook bought it and now has sort of changed the rules to say you have to have a Facebook account. What do you think about that, Mr. Benko?
Well, actually, let's dial it back a little bit. About 2 or 3 years ago in the summer, I was a speaker at Freedom Fest, which is a bunch of libertarians and other contrarians who get together in Las Vegas every year, except for during pandemics. And I had my first opportunity to actually try out a virtual reality headset. So you put this thing, this helmet on, and it creates a 3D virtual reality for you that is so incredibly vivid. I won't say real because it's clearly an animation, but it put me up on the 100th story of a skyscraper where I could be walking out on a plank, you know, 1,000 feet over the sidewalk. And even though I knew, I absolutely knew, no question about it, I was in a ballroom walking on the floor, the feeling of being 1,000 feet in the air, walking on this flimsy little board, walking in the plank, if you will, was so compelling that I could not bring myself to walk out on it. It was just extraordinary. So a guy named Palmer Luckey created this better than anything else that was out there at the time, virtual reality headset called Oculus Rift. And Facebook popped in and said, checked it out, realized it was better than anything else out there, and said, we'd better spend $1 billion. We can easily afford $1 billion or $2 billion to buy this. I can't remember which it was, but it was, since $1 billion is $1,000 million, all I know is
we have Rachel.
It's a lot of money. Well, oh good, I'm glad Rachel is here. So they just decided that if this was for real, if this was going to hit, they had to own it. So they bought it, and it was worth risking $1 billion or $2 billion rather than taking the risk that somebody else would gain control of virtual reality. So it's actually the next big thing, and it's probably going to destroy Western civilization as we knew it. Speaking of which, hello, Rachel.
Welcome to the end of Western civilization
as we know it. Welcome to WGXC and welcome to Tech Talk. Good to hear your voice. What can we do for you today?
Thank you. Well, I would like to know, since I recently joined Instagram, and two nights ago I joined TikTok. I joined Instagram because it says that's where all the younger people are. You know, they're not hanging out on Facebook. And then I joined TikTok because that's where my brother's daughters hang out at. And I figured, you know, maybe I could, you know, tip them off to good politics and, you know, maybe be able to help out there a little bit. But what I want to know is, what do you guys recommend for social media? And, you know, how much is too much, or... it's just overwhelming, and sometimes I feel like I'm spending all this time just updating multiple accounts over and over again.
Okay, Bill?
Well, I will basically say, unless you're earning a living doing it, if you're spending more than an hour on social media a day, it's probably a waste. If you're promoting yourself and it's part of your workflow, yeah, that's fine, but social media can become a dark tunnel, drag you into it and disconnect you from the rest of the real world really fast and take up a lot of your time. If you are self-employed, and I'm self-employed, I have to be careful on social media because you can get easily distracted from your actual work. And the fact is that I work on social media. So yeah, it's really tempting for me because I have to actually use the tool. So I would say, honestly, for an average person, I think if you're spending more than an hour a day, and if you're not having a meaningful conversation, if you're just arguing with people, I mean, do you really want to live your life that way? Probably not. Most people don't. So that's how I feel. I mean, if I'm having a conversation with somebody that I wouldn't want to have in my living room, I want to keep that to a dull roar. I want to keep that minimal.
Do you have any specific recommendations as to which platforms you prefer are better than other ones?
It really depends on where your circle is. If your circle of friends are on Twitter, then you should focus on that. Wherever your circle of friends are, I find that I'm a little older, so usually Facebook is where I meet. Like, I have a lot of old friends from the Navy, high school, etc. And I just go through Facebook and say hi to them, and, you know, we connect, and it's nice. But so I use that more, but I have children who probably use Instagram more, for instance, because that's where their circle of friends are. Where are your circle of friends? That's the question.
But what if you're using it for business? Because, you know, I use it for my politics.
Oh, well, then you have to be where your customers are. Where are your customers? Where are the people that you're trying to influence? I mean, if you're trying to influence younger people and you actually think they're going to vote, then Instagram is the way to go, isn't it? But if you're trying to influence people that are more likely to vote that are older, and if you want to get yelled at and screamed at, you got Twitter.
Yeah, I just started to feel kind of overwhelmed and hesitant once I joined TikTok. Because that just, I don't know, maybe it's my age, but everybody on there seems to just take 10-second videos of themselves and thinks it's wildly great.
That
That's pretty much what TikTok is. That you've just summed it up. That's actually, they're doing what the app wants them to do, and so bravo for them. Rachel, you have to think about the cost benefit of what you're doing. If your engagement on social media is getting you clients, helping your clients, or advancing your cause, if you have a cause, then it may be worth it. But if you look and you say, I spent 4 hours today and I didn't get a client, or none of this helped a single one of my clients, well, then no. So, I mean, I have clients that I do things on social media for, and I can measure, okay, did I get likes to their page? Did I get them followers? Did I get people to sign up for the email list or whatever I'm trying to do, or, you know, people that said they're going to vote for them or something. So I measure it by those standards as whether or not it's actually fruitful. And if it isn't, I'm pretty ruthless about just cutting it off.
Yeah, I used to stick with mainly just Facebook and Twitter, but, you know, now that everybody's getting kicked off of Facebook and Twitter and going to Parler, I mean, that's one you can't just ignore. I mean, do you do much on Parler? Or?
I have an account. I'm sure Ralph does, but I use tools that allow me to send messages out across multiple media, you know, multiple platforms.
What Bill is trying to ask you in his typical fumbling way is, what is your motive? Why are you on social media at all? And that's not meant as a poo-poo, okay? It's a literal question. What is your purpose there? What purposes are being served on by your time spent on social media? And once you tell us a little bit more about why you're doing it, are you doing it for fun? Are you doing it for profit? Are you doing it for a cause? Are you doing it for a business? Then we'll have a clearer picture as to how much will serve you best, how much is too much, and which of the various social media venues are probably best for you. But there's a twist ending to this story. And before I let you answer my question, which I will in a moment, I just want to let you into a secret. And that is, social media is built on what's called weak bonds. And that means you need to reach 4,000 people to move 4 of them. If you're moving to action, whether that's voting or that's contributing money or that is joining up for your cause in some way, shape, or form, if you're moving 1 out of 1,000 people on your social media following, that's good. If you're moving 2 or 3 out of 1,000, that's really great. But if you move 3 people, 3 votes, if you've spent an hour to try to move 1 vote, you have to ask your question whether that's really giving you either whether that's really advancing your purpose or that's just giving you emotional gratification, both of which are okay. You should just be really clear what the difference is. So the thing is, the really successful entities like Google, they're successful because they have not millions, but billions of, they touch billions of people. And if you're touching billions of people, 1 out of 1,000 is a lot, because 1 out of 1,000 for 1 million moves 1,000 people. 1 out of 1,000 for 1 billion moves, I don't know, maybe 1 million people. That's a lot that really matters. And it's the same thing on Facebook. If ordinary mortals like you and me are reaching a few thousand people, then we're only actually going to move maybe 1 or 2 people to action. And so keep that in proportion. If you like, if it's worth an hour of your time to move 1 person to vote when they weren't going to vote, or to vote for Trump when they were going to vote for Joe Jorgensen, the libertarian candidate, or whatever, then go for it. You're the ultimate arbiter of your fate. But to keep it in perspective, the impact that social media has is significant when you're dealing with the big people who are touching millions and billions of people. But for most civilians, like you and me, not like Bill Collier, a master of the universe, then the actual impact that you will have there is very modest. And if you love that, if that's your hobby, if that's your idea of a good time, go for it. If you think that you're bending the arc of history, you're probably deluded. Okay. And they all lived happily ever after, the end.
Okay, I see where you're going. And that kind of is addressing what I was getting at, which is that, you know, being in politics, the rewards I get from being active on social media are, they're almost intangible. Like, I can't sit here off the top of my head and tell you every, you know, great thing that's happened. But there's a lot of different variety of things, including, you know, people offering to pay me money to write something, or, you know, so it does, there is a payoff. And where I'm getting to the point where I had to ask you guys this question is because it seems like there's more and more platforms and more work to do. And, you know, you guys, it sounds like you're trying to help me find that happy medium where I want more opportunities to come to me, you know, so of course I want to do more social media, but at some point, you know, it's, what is it, the point of diminishing returns, I'm spending, you know, X amount more time, but I'm still only getting a handful extra opportunities.
If it's rewarding you, Rachel, then do it. If it's not rewarding you, then don't do it. And if you need help figuring out which of the platforms will reward you the most, call us back next week, because it's time for us to open up the lines for the next caller.
All right. That's a very polite way to kick me off.
Oh, maybe. Rachel, I'll just chime in. Yeah, he's bad. Listen, Rachel, I'll chime in a bit too. Look at the platforms that you're on and just research how many users are actually on them. And it, like you mentioned, the one platform, Parler. So look at how many users are actually on it and how many you're actually going to reach versus being on the other. And you just have to weigh it out. I mean, you don't need to be on every single platform. You need to be, it's the 80-20 rule. Put 80% of your energy on the 20% of the platforms that have 80% of the audience.
Bingo. Oh, my God. Bill, you've just proven the old axiom. Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn sometimes. Bravo.
It's very encouraging, Bingo. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Collier. Okay, Rachel, call us back next week and tell us how it's going.
All right. Your blind squirrel is saying goodbye.
No, that's Collier, not you. Jeez. Bill, your callers are so touchy.
I can barely help it. No, Rachel's awesome. She's, I'm sure, exceedingly intelligent because she knew to call into this show. So, great. So, all right. So back to Oculus while we wait for our next caller. I heard what you said. You gave me the history of Oculus, but you didn't really give me the response to the fact that Oculus changed its rules of the road and people are upset about it.
Right. What's your point?
Beko doesn't care that people are upset that they're being forced onto Facebook when all
they are not being forced onto Facebook. If they want to use this particular gizmo, which Facebook owns, then they have to come onto Facebook and use it. If somebody wants to play with my toys, they have to come to my house, Bill. I mean, what are you, some kind of commie radical?
Or
some kind of socialist?
Yeah, I'm not taking a stance on this. I'm just curious as to why the pushback has occurred, because the pushback is real.
Yeah, but you said it's from Germany, and remember, they're busy. Their hobby is invading Poland and stuff like that. So how much credibility should we give them, really?
We have Farouk in Raleigh.
Farouk and Raleigh, welcome.
I love the name.
Tech Talk.
Hello, how's everybody? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on, and I love your name, Farouk.
Oh, thank you so much. I didn't have much of a choice. It was given to me right when I was born. Listen, thank you so much for taking the call. So a really interesting thing and arguably a scary thing happened to me a couple weeks ago. And I thought this was the perfect place for me to air my concerns and get your gentleman's good feedback on it. My cell phone, for lack of a better description, got hacked a couple weeks ago. And the way that happened is, I think, informative to your listeners. And I think with some advice that I can get back from you, I'd like to be better protected. But bottom line, I used essentially, I was with a provider, I won't mention who. The hackers apparently somehow got my 4-digit PIN code. They called the provider and I guess convinced them that they were me. They initially switched the 4-digit PIN code to one that they would prefer. And then what I experienced is, in rapid succession and sort of one after the other, my email passwords for my primary email accounts, my Venmo account, and several other financial accounts were attempted to have their passwords changed. Some, they were successful, like my primary email address, they were able to change the passcode. And of course, what was happening is the dual authentication systems that are set up where you know, for your email, you use your cell phone number as a backup authentication method. Well, now they owned my cell phone number. They apparently ported my number to a different provider, that one that they had a phone that was going to be receiving the text messages, giving them the specific codes to validate, the security, from a security perspective, validation of their ability to change the passwords. And again, it happened like in a matter of 5 minutes. It was like in a blink of an eye. What I did ultimately is I contacted the FCC. I contacted my state's attorney general's office. They were not a whole lot of help. The best advice I got was that, hey, these hackers probably didn't change your name when they, gained possession of your account. You should find out where the account is held and essentially reclaim it. And that's ultimately what I did. I went to another provider. The FCC agent was able to tell me where the number was ported to. And then I basically provided my identification and reobtained my number. So that's my experience. But what can we do? This is going to happen, I guess, more and more. How do we consumers better protect ourselves with these dual authentication methods using our cell phone numbers as a mode of verification?
Okay, so a few things.
Bill, before you say a few things, hey, Farouk, first of all, fantastic. You handled that brilliantly. I've heard of other people who have had this exact same problem, and they ended up in cell phone hell and in internet hell, where they were getting their bank accounts cleaned out and where they were getting all kinds of traumatic things happening to them. And the fact that you handled this so adeptly and so capably, so quickly to insulate yourself is extremely impressive. So before Bill tells you everything that you did wrong, I just wanted to salute you for everything that you did right. Very impressive.
I appreciate that a lot. And if I can just add one thing, I literally stayed up the entire night. This happened on a Monday afternoon. To be able to get all this done, you know, as rapidly as I could, I literally stayed up all night in partially protecting other accounts that had not yet been tampered with, getting on the phone with various, agencies. But I appreciate that vote of confidence. I certainly felt tremendously violated. So. But I'll shut up and let Bill educate me.
Well, so I actually, I'm not, you did, your response to this was the right response. Things to protect, these things do happen and they can happen. Things to protect yourself really changing passwords, also not just changing passwords, but not having everything connected to one device. It sounds like you didn't have everything connected to it. But so, for instance, I have multiple phone. I have multiple phone lines, not a lot, but I mean, I have three phone lines, and they're actually partially designed to stop this from happening so that if one gets compromised, I've got a backup on the other. And I have another way to contact my cell phone provider through the other line. I'm curious as to how they got your PIN in the first place, because that's fairly common. I mean, that's fairly complicated. They need a lot of information. So somehow they got information about you from another source. And that's actually one of the curious bits. I don't know if you have any kind of identity protection program or if you do any of these background services that look for dark web history on you. I've had things come up on me, for instance, where I knew somebody was trying to use my data and I was able to interfere with it. Have you ever used any of those services?
No, I honestly have not. I've been tempted to, but this was sort of a wake-up call for me. And I, about the PIN, you're absolutely right. You know, I'll never use 1234 as a PIN again. But having said that, in all seriousness, I think that somebody must have, I mean, somewhere I think somebody gained access, because my PIN was not an easy one for somebody to just kind of guess. It wasn't tied to a birthday or a common PIN that I would use on, you know, virtually any other security step. So I don't know. That part is a wonder for me. But in terms of identity protection, this has been a wake-up call. Do you have some recommendations of ones that I should look into that are, you know, budget-wise friendly? But, you know,
I don't hear, because there are so many that you can choose from. There's a service called binverified.com as an example, and I don't make
I'm it. Sorry, Bill, could you say that slower, because
it's called binverified.com, instant checkmate.com. There's a bunch that are like that, are like that you can do background checks, like cursory. They're not very accurate background checks, so don't use them for research, but they are tools that do offer a monitoring service of the dark web. There's also actual identity protection services, and there are numerous ones, too numerous to mention. The best thing to do is type in the best identity protection services, and then just do reviews of them, because they're going to have different features that would be hard for me in just one phone call to see what you'd really need.
Sure.
But you really have to protect yourself in that way, because the point of failure in your whole scenario was somebody got your personal information. The other thing is the cell provider. I don't know if you have a lawyer, but I would call one, find out whether they were actually in the wrong. Maybe they actually gave information to somebody that really they shouldn't have, and they had no reason to, because they caused you all this grief. And the cell phone provider that would do that, to me, seems like that's a point of accountability that, in terms of protecting people in the future, is these cell phone providers should be very hesitant to give that information out. I know even from my bank, they won't give me a PIN over the phone. They'll mail it to my address as an example.
That's a great point, because besides the PIN, they still ask me other data to verify, you know, my mother's maiden name. I mean, although it's possible these criminals could have gotten access to some of it, but just to be able to change my PIN code, thereby allowing them to port my service somewhere else or my phone number somewhere else, it's almost as if somebody at the provider's end dropped the ball. I made that assertion, but, you know, it was rather insulting how inadequately the provider handled our situation. They were completely clueless, and they were just sort of, and they provided wrong information. One agent said one thing, they said they were going to call us right back, and you know, the point being is, as a consumer, I felt completely sort of left out in the cold. So I think that there is a testament to making sure that in this day and age, that you know that the provider that you're getting your service through is going to have some sort of a response resolution, you know, process and contact number, this provider specifically was not equipped well. So I do have a lawyer. We discussed this, you know, loosely, but if you feel like it's appropriate for me to bring it up, I'm happy to do that and file a, you know, maybe a formal complaint or something.
I just think that if we hold them accountable, it's a good thing. Either A, this person actually had your information, or B, some call center worker didn't follow the right protocol and just believed somebody. There's a right. C, a third possibility, which is somebody in that company is actually in on the scam. So there's three possibilities.
Okay, well, I appreciate that encouragement. I will do exactly what you said, and I will see if there's some more of a more formal, you know, investigation that can be had, because I don't want it to obviously happen to other people. And the rapid nature of how quickly they were able to sort of respond, you know, get the passwords changed, it seems to me like there was definitely more than one person, you know, doing this, and they were very well equipped. So anyway, but thank you for that information.
Yeah, no worries. If you're going to have multiple accounts, if you have a phone, don't connect everything. Not just talking to you in general, but
sure.
Farouk, but to everybody. If you're going to have multiple accounts, don't connect them all to one device. Use multiple. There are other ways of doing account authentication that are not related to your cell phone. So try those. There's actually tools which I will make a note for next show. Maybe I'll go over some tools that you can get that actually provide authentication that are like almost as good as blockchain, that allow you to authenticate things. I can't remember the one that I use. There's one that I actually have for one of my logins. It's so important to me that it sends a thing to an app, and you have to have my information, which is unique to that app. It's like a encrypted code. And then I get the authentication code, which allows me to recover a password. So
super.
There are
other
ways of doing authentication that you should also explore other than just your phone.
Thank you, Farouk. We hope that's been helpful. And if not, call us up again next Monday and give Bill Collier holy heck.
No, it's very helpful. No, I appreciate it. You've sort of validated a lot of what I was thinking. So thank you so much, and enjoy the show very much. Thank you both.
Thank you. Appreciate you having a listener.
Thank you, Farouk. Thank you for calling in. Bill, while we're waiting for our next caller, which shouldn't take too long, would you please tell our listeners what a VPN is and whether they should have one, and if they should have one, which one you use? Don't tell them what they should have, because I know everybody varies, but if you would just tell them what you use, that might be a good starting point for some of our millions and billions of listeners.
Well, you know, I don't just use one VPN.
I didn't know VPN, that, but I'm very sad to learn that about you, Bill.
That I don't just use one?
Yeah.
No, I use multiple VPNs for different purposes because I do research.
Would you tell our sane listeners, of whom I'm an example, what the heck a VPN is?
I will tell them. I think we talked about this in the last show, but we can revisit it.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good thing until our next caller comes in.
The VPN, the word stands for Virtual Private Network, which basically is a fancy way of saying that when you log into this network, it disguises where you are. So if you're in Accra and you're on, you know, going online right now, you have an address that some things can see, like through your email, or if you're online chatting, they'll be able to see that your address, called an IP address, but it's just like a bunch of numbers that say where you are, says you're there. Well, you don't want people to know you're there. So you log into this other network, which is called the VPN. And through that, you can be in Russia or China or Japan or wherever you want to be from. You could be from.
I want to be from Estonia. Can I be from Estonia?
Yes, you can be from Estonia, and
lovely.
Estonia, by the way, is so far ahead of the world when it comes to the internet. We could do it if we did a tech talk show in Estonia. They'd probably like school us every day. So
yeah,
we're all in there. But so basically, this the other thing that this does is it kind of you can create firewalls, which is just basically something that's like an electronic barrier between the bad guys and your computer, so that they can't get into your device very easily. So they don't even know, they don't know where you're at. They can't track you down. They can't plant stuff in your computer very easily. Heck of a lot more secure way to go. And it doesn't, you know, key log all your searches. So, you know, if you're searching for shovels and how to dig holes in the backyard and how not to get caught doing things, not that you should ever be doing anything like that, but even if you were doing it as an art project.
There have been a few mysterious disappearances in your neighborhood. What is this about? You're researching shovels and digging holes in the backyard again?
Exactly, yeah. You don't want to get into that. You don't want to go down
yeah,
there.
Could you be a little more, you know, explicit?
Well, I would never do such searches because I'm a fine human being. So, and you'll never find any of those kind of searches on my computer.
Never, because you have multiple VPNs. Got it.
Yes, we have Dan in Arlington is calling.
Oh, Dan in Arlington, bring it on.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
We are doing
fine. Well, it all depends on what you mean by how and you.
Well, good. Thanks for taking my call. It's a pretty simple call, but I think it's just really a sign of the times. I've been, I'm in the kind of industry where I had gone to many events and I've had lots of really in-person meetings. And as you can imagine, over the past 6 months, it's really gone full virtual. I've been to more Zoom meetings, Zoom calls, even Zoom events, if you will, that I care to comment on. And I'm curious, I noticed recently that even the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, has canceled their in-person version in 2021. I think it's the first time they've ever had to do it. It's going to be full virtual. Is this the new normal? And do you think this is going to be, this COVID-19 pandemic, do you think this is going to lead to a more of a long-standing trend of virtual events going forward? And I guess the second question is the platform of Zoom itself. Do you feel that this is a secure platform for businesses and even education?
Ralph, do you want to start or do you want me to?
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, so I'm going to start. There's a lot to unpack, and I'm going to unpack all of it as quickly as I can. So with regards to Zoom, is it super secure? In my opinion, if I was having a very secure meeting or conversation, I might go down the road of Skype. Zoom has had all kinds of issues with people breaking into Zoom meetings and, you know, this kind of thing, whereas when I'm having a very confidential meeting, I tend to use Skype. Whereas if it's a large meeting of people that when I'm on Zoom, I typically will just basically assume, hey, if I'm going to be here talking, I'm going to act like I don't care if anybody takes video of what I'm saying. Not that I say anything off color when I'm not around other people, but, you know, confidential things, private things, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's my take on it. Do I think the virtual is going to become the normal? I do believe we're going to see a shift toward virtual. I don't think we're going to replace the normal. I think we may go back to having more in-person events, but I think the irony, and we'll see if my prediction is true, I think that you'll start to see virtual events that everybody can come to, which broadens the scope of how many people can participate. But I think that the in-person participation is not going to be like the big room full of people, but it's going to be like the cocktail party, meet the senator. It's going to be more premium and high end and more expensive, I think. So people still want to do the press the flesh. They want to do the face to face. So the people running these events will have an option to broaden the scope of who can participate, who will pay to participate. But that in-person touch is going to become like the bespoke level that you're going to have to pay a premium for. That's basically my theory.
68% of CEOs in Fortune 500 companies in one survey I saw, and I don't remember exactly where, basically said that a decent percentage of plurality of their workers would not be coming back from working virtual after all is said and done. I know people that own businesses that I even told before this happened, like years ago, that they should be making more virtual structures, that were forced to do that and now can't even see themselves ever going back because it's actually more efficient and there's less drama and people just get their work done and they don't talk around the water cooler and gossip about each other all day. I don't know if that, does that answer your questions, Dan?
No, that was the best thing about working in an office. What are you talking about? Without the gossip, what is, you know, life is meaningless, empty and meaningless. Come on.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. It really is. I think about that a lot because I also think, to your point, I think human-to-human interaction may actually become more valuable because right now, you know, a year ago, we all had to go to another conference, you know, just what I feel like doing. Now, in many cases, people actually want to go back and see, so people may have more of a value now on that face-to-face time in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but let's loop back into Oculus Rift for a minute. If, in fact, Bill is right, which I think happened back in 1959, so it could happen again, if virtual reality helmets make it as if you are in 2023, as if you were in the same room with those people, you do not have to spend $2,000 and 2 days of your life flying somewhere to have a one-hour meeting with someone. You could just put on your Oculus Rift helmet or your other VR helmet, and boom, you're there. So I think that Bill might be right twice in one night when he says that we are moving toward a more intimate digital business context than we've had before. And it's much more efficient, saves you days, saves you thousands of dollars, and you get to have the same kind of, you know, 90% of the same kind of human interaction as if you walked into the same room with your prospect. Bill, is that a fair summary?
I would say more or less it's a fair summary, but I still think the person-to-person is still going to be, like I said, that's why I use the word bespoke. It's sort of like I could virtually shake hands with Neil Armstrong when he was alive, but is that really the same as taking a picture with him and saying, hey, I met Neil Armstrong in person? I don't think nothing's ever going to replace the in-person completely.
Bill, try not to get confused. You met Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong's, and then we have actual photographs of you hanging out with Buzz Aldrin. Yeah. You've got a little ray gun that Buzz Aldrin actually gave you.
All that cute.
You have Buzz's business card.
I'm the
it's Buzz Aldrin of Apollo 11, the first two men to walk on the moon. It was, I hate to have to sort you out, but it was not Neil Armstrong. Sorry.
If he's hearing this, he might be insulted. But back to that though, meeting him in person and having breakfast with him or something like is something that you can't replace even with virtual. It's just to say that I was there. So we may see this sort of, here's the virtual participation, then there's the actual immersive 3D, and then there's the actual in-person bespoke. But the bottom line is, yes, we're going to see less in-person stuff. Look, I used to live near the D.C. area and work down there and go down there all the time. And over the years, I live far from D.C., and I very rarely ever have to go down there. Most of my business comes from that area, but I don't live there and nobody expects me to. No, and even now it's better, you know, nobody, whereas before people might actually ask me, oh, can you come into my office? And they look at, you know, maybe make a funny sound when I said, not really. Now they don't care. Oh, we'll do virtual. We'll do Skype or we'll do, you know, whatever. So I think it's making it easier for people that are not wanting to live near large population centers that want to live out in the country. that are that can still work at that level, you know, provide that kind of service to people. So this is happening in New York. This is happening in L.A. It's happening in D.C. It's happening all over the country.
Yeah, Bill, you know, I mean, to be honest, to be brutally, brutally honest, you're a geek. I want to know what Dan thinks.
You know, I think you have both raised great points, and sometimes I do miss the face to face, but I do I kind of do see the writing on the wall. I think there's going to be more, in many ways, maybe more equal, maybe more fair for folks who attend conferences, that, even government officials. I think a lot of times it was very difficult to get government officials to travel to these conferences outside of the Washington metro. Now they can, if they want to attend a San Francisco event, they can just hop on Zoom or Skype, as you said. So I think that dynamics have changed, but I don't know, maybe I'm just, you know, old-fashioned, but I still prefer the in-person ones for the most part. But, you know, 30 years from now, who knows?
Okay, but Dan, you're old-fashioned. What do you do for a living?
Well, I work in the trade association business, and it keeps me, obviously, it's very face-to-face intensive, and it's, you know, person-to-person, and it thrives on relationship building. And that's one of the reasons why conferences and meet-and-greets, networking, et cetera, were so important. And so now the world's changed, and so that's why I'm just having, and not just me, but I know a lot of folks in this space are having kind of an adjustment challenge. I hope it gets easier, and maybe it will, but maybe I'm just getting Zoom fatigue. But
we want to know how this is for you in practice. You remember what the greatest yogi in the history of yoga once said? That's Yogi Berra to you. That in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice, there is. So you, instead of listening to Yogi Collier talking about the theory, tell us what your up-close and personal experience of the in-practice is Zoom, is online meeting and greeting people, you know, one-tenth, one-half, or 90% as good as actually meeting them in person?
Yeah, you know, from my perspective, you know, I'd say it's a lot less practical, because it's hard to have that human interaction. There's something about shaking a hand or getting to know somebody in person, more so for the after hours, the networking, the shaking hand style. The conference part, like the fireside chats and the panels, that's actually not that bad, because I find myself paying more attention to it, because, you know, as opposed to being in the audience, you can zone out or hop on your phone. I feel like sometimes when it's online, you can actually pay attention to it more. But it's just the after hours, maybe the human interaction and the networking is the more of a challenge for me.
Dan, I'm hearing you, and I was actually going to speak to this, and boy, you hit the nail on the head. See, the issue is not that, yeah, when it comes to like having the panel or whatever, yeah, that's fine. But it can't replace buttonholing somebody in an elevator and going out and having a drink or going for a couple of rounds of golf or something. One of the things that I have done, because I've been doing virtual for many years and I love personal interactions, I actually have made it a habit to connect with people. So when I'm having a virtual conference and I want to get to know somebody, I'll say, hey, I might mess, because, you know, you can message people through these apps, like personally. I might say, hey, I would like to talk to you offline about something. And I connect with people. So I've built up a repertoire, and I spend a lot of time talking to people. And sometimes I'll call them just to say, hey, how are you doing? I was thinking about you today, or, you know, I think of something that might interest them. I like relationships for the sake of relationships. I don't just do it to develop business, but I do develop a lot of business because of it. And for me, that has been my version of the elevator, ride up the elevator and go have a drink, is I stay in touch with people. And I find that people want to stay in touch with you. And they're like, really, you want to talk to me personally? They're kind of shocked. And sometimes people don't like it, but almost 90% of the time, they're happy that I actually am interested in them. So if this is an issue for you, I would strongly recommend that you look for strategies to connect with these people whether, hey, I'm going to drop you. Can you, I'd like to drop an email to you, and then start the conversation with them offline, outside of the group, outside of the Zoom meeting.
Thank you, Dan. That was a very valuable call, very valuable perspective. We thank you very much for calling in, and you know, keep us posted on how it's going in the post coronavirus world.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bill, the idea of having to ride up in an elevator with you is really scary. How many floors do we have to go?
Banco, we should tell the story sometime about how we met at an event. And
I don't remember the elevator ride.
It wasn't.
Was I drunk, or was there no, or were you just making this up?
No. I've met many people on elevator rides, but I met you at an event in D.C., and there was a group of people, and then I didn't really interact with you there, but then I interacted with you through email, and then we started to talk, and then, of course, all the rest is history, and your life has never been the same.
I think I remember FDR talking about this moment, and he referred to it as a day that will live in infamy.
That is a different moment. That is when I firebombed your basement. But you deserve.
Oh yeah. Something like I just wasn't sure. Okay. Well, let's see. Hopefully our millions of listeners will not be discouraged by busy signals and will be calling in to Tech Talk on Waveform WGSC in Accra. And I am going through my,
Let me do the number, Ralph. 518-697-7400. 518-622-2598. Call in and see if you can stump Ralph, which is very.
Man, Collier, your FM radio voice needs a lot of work.
Thank you.
But if practice makes perfect. And so with any luck, we'll get some people calling in and you can practice your fakey FM radio voice on them instead of on the poor techs at WGXC, who I'm sure have heard better FM radio voices in their lives many, many, many times. Poor souls.
Ralph is the reason people with thinner skin have insecurities. Whereas I myself, being a tech guy myself, I'm very capable of ignoring audio content that's coming from him. So
I think the technical term for that is Asperger syndrome, but I get the point. Thick skin, rhinoceros skin, Collier, rhinoceros skin. Okay, well, out of our millions of listeners streaming on the internet, not to mention the hundreds of thousands in the greater Accra area. We are now available taking callers again. So those of you who are discouraged by the long busy signals from our previous callers of, Rachel and Farouk and Dan, bring it on. Play Stump the Collier, which is much more fun than playing Stump the Banco.
Well, while you're listening, remember, listeners, if you're on Facebook, the Facebook changes to the new format are mandatory. They're becoming mandatory. So you're not going to be able to use the old format. You're going to have to get used to the new format. It is supposed to be cleaner, easier to navigate. They have tested this pretty thoroughly. I hear a lot of people complain about it. I can tell you that I actually love the new format. I can see the group of people with pitchforks and torches outside of my window right now wanting to ask me some questions about that. But
that's why you live in a windmill, Bill.
Believe it or not, it will either make you more productive or it will make Facebook more addictive. That's your choice. But it could do either for you.
Why not both?
I'm not addicted to anything.
Well, that's not what I hear.
Food. Oh, very, very good. So just so our listeners are aware, those changes are going to be permanent. You need to be aware that those things are going to be permanent.
Well, what are those things, Bill? Because I'm on Facebook. I spend minutes there a day, and I find a slightly new, annoying format, which...
Just a few things. The photo size has changed. I won't get into the minutiae of it, but like your cover photo has changed in size. But that's not really a problem because Facebook normally crops things and you can adjust it, and that hasn't changed. It just will look different. The profile photo doesn't overlap with the cover photo anymore. Yeah, the like and share buttons have moved. So they're off to the side. That's kind of interesting. Like I said, I find that they have actually, it's actually easier for me. Navigation tabs have relocated. I'll give you an example. The tab that has your notifications, which is a little bell, is to the hard right. And it's easy to see. It's usually lit up with little red numbers or something if it's actually got something in it. I've had a number of people say they couldn't find it, but it's right there. They're part of the change, I think, is because they've been adding so many things, everything from the marketplace to now you have groups. You can make your own little rooms. So they got to have room for all those things, and it has to not be all cluttered. And that's what was beginning to happen. The call to action button is prominent and customizable on your pages if you have a page, which I really like. So if you are running a Facebook page, they're just a lot easier to manage as far as that goes. I don't know. It's just so many great things. It's just awesome. But like I said, some people don't like it.
Well, I'm guessing that is the Josh Hawleys of the world, Senator Hawley, who is anti-social media in general. So I'm not really too worried about the Luddites out there, but I am curious as to, you're talking much faster. There's this thing on my Facebook page called a activity log. What the heck is that?
We are about to go off the air, folks. This has been Tech Talk. We will pick that up next week, right where we left off. Thank you for having us on WGXC.
And thank you, Bill Collier, for being here to get played in Stump the Collier on Tech Talk.
Very good.
Thank you, listeners. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Here's 2020 new music from Matmos. The song is called Adam's Apple from the album The Consuming Flame, Open Exercises in Group Form.